Yes, Your Honor. This case involves a motion to reopen an order of deportation. Mr. Krugliak entered the United States in 1991 and immediately filed for asylum. In 1997, the Immigration Court finally denied the asylum application. Mr. Krugliak was married the same year to a U.S. citizen. An appeal was filed. While the appeal was pending, a visa application was filed and was later approved. I should and I must mention that the respondent, the petitioner, Mr. Krugliak, his wife, became a citizen only in 2001. She was a lawful resident back in 97 when they were married. The board denied asylum in 98, and Mr. Krugliak filed a motion to reopen, stating that he had new evidence that was previously unavailable. The new evidence were court documents that he is under investigation in Ukraine based on his membership in the Uniate Catholic Church and what they believe are foreign activities which they don't like. The board denied it, and they stated that the evidence they felt was previously available. The record is clear. There's no question of the fact in this case. Mr. Krugliak acquired and sent an apostille, which is an international power of attorney, to his mother in the Ukraine before his initial trial to get the documents to prove that he was in danger. She took it, she got the documents, and she refused to send it to him. She gave an excuse, well, it might get lost in the mail, and she also indicated that she wanted him personally to come and get it because, unfortunately, she was dying of leukemia and she wanted to see him. He tried to get it. He requested from the Immigration Service permission in the form of advance parole to leave the U.S., go to France, where his mother had moved, and get the documents to bring them back. Immigration Service refused.
What was the ground of their refusal?
They didn't. There's no written decision. They simply denied it, Your Honor. Now, the Board of Immigration Appeals has stated that the petitioner, Mr. Krugliak, has shown no good reason why the documents couldn't have been submitted. We contend that the petitioner, Mr. Krugliak, did everything he could to get the documents. He did it before the initial trial. He worked on it for years, and his family withheld it from him. The documentary evidence supports his allegations, and the board doesn't deny it, any of the allegations of fact. They state it's not good enough. It was available, he should have submitted it, even though it's evident he had no way to get it. He did everything he could, and he couldn't get it. We contend that that decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals is an error of law. The decision that under the statute and under the regulations that this is considered available or unavailable, that's a legal conclusion.
Only his mother had access to this evidence he's talking about?
She had the physical evidence. She got it through the apostille that he was issued by the state.
Why couldn't somebody get it from where she got it?
Your Honor, I don't know if there were other means of getting it. If that's an open question, it would be speculative. Maybe he had other people who could get it. But he didn't have a power to make anyone get it. The most he could possibly do, as far as we can imagine, is to ask somebody please to get it for him. And that's what he did. And they got it and refused to give it to him. Maybe he could have asked other people to send apostilles. I don't know. But it's speculative to conclude he must have had other ways of getting it. It looks from the record like he did everything he could. The board stated it's not good enough, but that's speculative. We believe that we've shown that he did everything a reasonable person could possibly do to get the item, and that if there were other means of getting it, we don't know what they were. The board's conclusions of law, even in a motion to reopen, are subject to plenary de novo review. That's what this court held in Choudhury versus the Immigration Service. The government's attorney would have it that that's discretionary, that their conclusions of law are discretionary. They're not. A conclusion of law is a conclusion of law. With regard to the second issue, the petitioner, married to a United States citizen, was granted a visa by the Immigration Service. The visa is available, and he would like to request adjustment of status to lawful permanent residence, a different and a new form of relief that he wasn't eligible for before. He requested it while the case was still in front of the board asking to reopen the asylum application. The board has stated that they won't look at it. They feel that they won't exercise jurisdiction over it. The trouble is, Congress directed that the immigration courts and the board, they are the ones to adjudicate this application. The case was in front of the board. The board, we contend, does not have discretion to state that they just won't process an application that they're obligated to process. Now, the Board of Immigration Appeals is not like a court. It's not like this court, and it's not like the lower district court, and it's not like a civil court. They've got two functions. One of their functions is enforcement, ordering people deported, and one of their functions is benefits, processing applications that are pending before them. They've stated that they don't want to, they want finality, so they won't process the application. Your Honors, finality is not the same as deportability. If he's eligible for adjustment and they're the forum to process the application, they should process it. Moreover, since the case was already in front of them with a timely filed motion to reopen, there's no issue at all of finality. This creates no delay, it's no additional new procedure, it's no new time. It's in front of them, it's a new form of relief, and they don't have discretion to refuse to process it. We would contend that the board's decision to the contrary is erroneous as a matter of law as to both applications, as to the adjustment application, and as to the new evidence regarding asylum.
Thank you, Mr. Berman. Mr. Flynn?
Just as a preliminary matter to clear up some of the allegations as far as how Petitioner's attorney was presenting the evidence. The allegedly new evidence was not a court document. It was a letter purportedly from a Ukrainian Ministry of Justice official. Additionally, when Petitioner requested advance parole from the INS, he did not ask. He never stated that he was wanting to return to the Ukraine to retrieve documents for his case. He just said, my mother's ill, I want to go see my mother. And it's a lengthy letter in the administrative record, but nowhere in that letter does he mention that she had vital documents for his immigration. Turning to the two issues here, first off, the evidence that he sought to proffer in his motion to reopen was neither new nor was it previously unavailable. The evidence was definitely not duly discovered. Petitioner admitted that he was aware of the existence of this evidence prior to his asylum hearing in 1997. Additionally, the evidence was not previously unavailable. Petitioner conflates his failure to obtain it with the unavailability of that evidence. Now, if Petitioner had exercised the same diligence he showed in obtaining other documentary materials from the Ukraine, which were presented to the immigration judge, this letter from the Ministry of Justice also could have been presented before the immigration judge. Additionally, his actions were far from diligent. He said in his affidavit that he attached to his motion to reopen, he said his mother was concerned about sending the letter through the official mail. However, he obtained all the other letters from his friends in the Ukraine through this informal courier service. So any reservations his mother may have had could have easily have been overcome with this alternative courier service he was employing. Additionally, apparently all he did was send his mother a power of attorney to go and get the documents from the Ministry of Justice. Obviously, based on the letters that he submitted to the immigration judge, he had a number of trusted associates and friends that were still in the Ukraine who he could also have solicited to go and procure this document. Especially, he could have either gone to them initially as a backup to his mother, or especially after his mother balked at sending him the documentation in the spring of 97 before his hearing on the merits before the immigration judge, he could have called one of his other friends, sent him the power of attorney, and procured the document that way. So his efforts were far from diligent. Also, we've got to keep in mind that he could have and arguably should have sought these documents in October 1991 when he first filed his asylum request. He did not. And he was clearly on notice of the need for this evidence in August of 1995 when the INS administratively denied his asylum application. And basically he said, we don't believe that the Ukrainian government is still targeting him. He no action until May of 1996, according to his affidavit, when he sent his mother a power of attorney. And he did not even inquire further about this request, about this power of attorney and his request for his mother until the spring of 1997. So in that regard, his actions were far from diligent, and he can't now be stating, well, I did everything possible. He did not do everything possible. He did the very minimum to obtain this document. Turning to the motion to reopen, and the motion remaining to be construed as the motion to reopen. First, board's interpretation and construction of the Senate regulations is entitled to great deference. And especially with the regulation at issue here, 8 CFR section 3.2 concerning motions to reopen and reconsider, which, as the Supreme Court has stated, are generally discouraged. In matter of SEK, the court construed this regulation and the operation and interaction of motions to reopen and motions to remand, and said if an alien has an administratively final order of deportation, which petitioner did, a motion to remand will be construed as a motion to reopen, unless and until such time as the proceedings are reopened. Did he have a final order of deportation? Yes. When his appeal was dismissed by the board back in 1998, his deportation order became final at that point. That is why he was seeking to reopen the proceedings.
When did the deportation order become final?
Immigration judge's asylum denial, sir.
Okay, thanks.
And so he did have a final order. And the board's decision in matter of LVK was specifically approved by the Fifth Circuit in the case of Wang v. Ashcroft. Now, basically, and it just makes logical sense, in order to remand the case, the petitioner must first obtain a reopening of the case in order to revive the proceedings, and thereby have a live case that is capable of being remanded. So, clearly, there was motion to remand. There was nothing to remand. There was no case before the board at that point because the board had not yet ruled on this motion to reopen. And if, in fact, this court approves the construction of matter of LVK, which was also affirmed in Wang, then petition does contest that his second motion to reopen, which was styled as a motion to reopen, was untimely. Throughout his brief, petitioner cited to Chowdhury this court's decision concerning motions to reopen. However, that case is clearly distinguishable and is unavailing here. First off, Chowdhury was not subject to a final order of deportation when he filed his motion to reopen, what he called a motion to reopen and remand. So, just on that ground alone, it's distinguishable from the incident case. And also, the board was concerned, or the court was concerned with the due process considerations that were present in Chowdhury. The alien there never had a meaningful opportunity to have his adjustment application heard. In this case, the only reason that this alien is eligible for adjustment of status is because he overstayed his grant of voluntary departure. The board, when they dismissed his appeal back in August of 1998, granted voluntary departure until September 6, 1998. He did not depart. He did not seek an extension of his voluntary departure. He just chose to ignore both the board's grant and his promise that he would leave by the time designated. So in that time, he just continued to accrue additional immigration benefits. That's why cases such as Abreu from the Supreme Court recognize that granting motions to reopen too freely will, and I'm quoting now, will permit endless delay of deportation by aliens creative and thorough enough to continuously produce new material facts sufficient to establish a prima facie case. The longer they stay here, the more benefits that they're likely to accrue. So, in this case, he ignored and just disregarded his grant of voluntary departure, and that's the only reason that he's eligible for adjustment at this point. So on that basis alone, but also is distinguishable from the holding in Chowdhury. The same due process considerations that guide the court in Chowdhury are simply not present here. That's all I have, gentlemen.
All right.
If you have any questions.
No, thank you, Mr. Flynn. Mr. Berman?
Thank you.
Your Honor, I'd like to respond to a few issues. The first, regarding the other means that the petitioner supposedly had to get his document, that maybe he should have sent other apostilles to his friends. This is completely speculative. There's no evidence in the record about that. We can't deny a motion and prevent the respondent from having his case heard and presenting evidence, which is there, which exists, on speculation. Maybe there's some other way he could have gotten it. At a bare minimum, if there are questions what else he could have done, send it to the court. Let the court ask those questions. We can't speculate out of the clear blue. Maybe there's some other thing he could have done. He sent for the document. His mother got it and refused to give it. Now, her excuse, the board is right. That's a terrible excuse. Maybe she had other ways to get it. But the petitioner stated in his affidavit, and the documents show, she was dying of leukemia. She was trying to force him to go there to visit her. And she was using those documents as a means of trying to force him to go there, not understanding that if he leaves, he's self-deporting. He can't do it as much as he'd like to do it. The documents all support the factual allegations. Everything else that's been said is speculative, and we can't deny a motion based on speculation like that. With regard to the notice that of due diligence, the petitioner here requested the documents many, many months before trial. His case was sitting with the Immigration Service Asylum Office for 4 years. They finally issued a denial. There's no notice of anything then. Until he's set for trial in his asylum application, it's not the time to be scrambling and trying to get documents because you don't know what documents you might need. Conditions change. The country conditions change. Back in 91, the circumstances of the Greek Uniate Church were much, much worse. It was the time, and I believe it's still the time, of the Lautenberg Amendment, granting automatic refugee status to Greek Uniate Catholics. The Congress of the United States believed that these people were in danger. This may have changed according to the State Department in 1994. It may or it may not have. Regarding the case of Choudhury, it's indistinguishable from this case. There was a final removal order in absentia in that case. It's exactly the same. It can't be distinguished. This case isn't the same as Choudhury. LVK, the board's case, it's true. If LVK is upheld, then the second motion has to be denied. We contend that LVK is wrong. It shouldn't be upheld because it's a wrong decision. The Fifth Circuit upheld it. This circuit should not. With regards to disregarding a voluntary departure, supposedly promising to leave, the petitioner in this case never did. There's nothing in the record anywhere that I saw where the petitioner says, I promise I'll leave. On the contrary, he's married to somebody from 97 before there's even a final order. How is he going to promise to leave? The board grants permission to leave voluntarily in their decision in 98. They didn't ask him, are you going to leave?
Voluntarily, when could he have returned?
If he left voluntarily, he would...
Yes.
Had he left them? I believe he could have returned if he... I believe he could have returned upon as soon as the visa is available then. Had he left in the 30 days.
How long did that take, get a visa from the UK?
At that time, his wife was still a lawful resident alien. She wasn't a citizen, so the visa was simply not available. He didn't have a visa to get.
No, I know, but suppose he voluntarily left.
Sure.
Voluntarily. When would he be able to come back to the United States?
The visa became available first in 2001.
No, pardon,
can't leave until there's a visa available.
Look, suppose he left voluntarily, as he was ordered to. When could he come back?
In theory or in reality, Your Honor?
Either
he can't
one.
Come back without a visa.
I know. When could he get a visa?
Not till 91. Not till his wife became a citizen. There was no 91. Visa for him. 2001, Your Honor. Not till 2001.
So he would have had to leave for what, 3 years?
We didn't know at the time. It turned out that it's 3 years. It could have been indefinitely.
Why indefinitely if his wife became a citizen?
He became a citizen not until 2001. The board's orders in 98, Your Honor. The board's orders before there's an approval of the visa petition. There is no visa
but
for him.
But you see, what your opponent, what Mr. Flynn argued with some persuasive force, was that by disobeying the order to depart, then that keeps him here until she becomes a citizen, and then he tries to use that as the reason for being allowed to stay, so that delay and defiance of orders is being rewarded. That's his argument.
It was a grant of permission, Your Honor. It's not defying an order. The deportation branch called him in. He went in. They allowed him to stay here. There's no defiance and no breaching of any orders, Your Honor. That's not what happened.
He was ordered to depart.
He was given permission to depart voluntarily.
There's also an order of deportation.
Should he not leave within the 30 days, then there's an order of deportation. It's up to the Immigration Service to enforce it. They decided not to enforce it. They didn't forget about it. They called him in and determined that they weren't going to enforce it. And he didn't ignore any orders.
So now if he's deported, when can he return?
Not for 10 years after the date of deportation, Your Honor. 10 years.
So
not 5 years.
He was taking a big risk by not departing voluntarily.
Had he left voluntarily, it's a bigger risk. It's likely he'll never come back again. There's no approved visa and there's nothing available.
You said 3 years.
At the time in 98, looking at it from his vantage point then in 1998, there's no approved visa at all, and his wife's not a U.S. citizen. We don't know if or when she'll become a citizen, and we don't know if the visa will be approved.
What do you mean you didn't know when she'd become a citizen?
Citizenship's not automatic, Your Honor. There's a time requirement, and it takes the Immigration Service time to, once the person's available, to process it. It's not automatic.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. Berman.
Thank you.
Mr. Flynn, we thank you. Mr. Flynn?
Yes, sir.
I know these are challenging times for the INS, but have we straightened out this notice problem that you have? All right, so you're suggesting we would be advised to what, call the department on these cases? No, I'm speaking of how you would have our clerk's office better contact you. That's, I'm looking for some help. All right. Well, the INS is still part of the Department of Justice, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
All right. I know there's a movement afoot, but all right. Well, thank you for participating by phone, Mr. Flynn. And thank you, Mr. Berman. Case is taken under advisement. Court will proceed to the fifth case, Rice versus McDonald.